The Great Cholesterol Myth: Why Lowering Your Cholesterol Won't Prevent Heart Disease, and The Statin-Free Plan That Will, by Johnny Bowden, Ph.D., and Stephen Sinatra, M.D. Narrated by George K. Wilson. Copyright 2012 by Johnny Bowden and Stephen Sinatra. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Fair Winds Press, care of Alan O'Shea Literary Agency, and was produced in the year 2013 by Tantor Media Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Never underestimate the convictions of the conventional, particularly in medicine. William Davis, M.D. The mind is like a parachute. It only works if it's open. Anthony J. DeAngelo. Foreword. 200 years ago, physicians routinely bled, purged, and plastered their patients. Bloodletting was the standard treatment for a host of diseases, and had been so since the time of the philosopher-physician Galen, almost 2,000 years before. The theory was that there were four humors: blood, phlegm, black bile, and yellow bile. Blood was dominant, requiring the most balancing for returning an ill patient to health. Every doctor's kit was equipped with a variety of lancets, brutal-looking scarificators, and, starting in the early 19th century, leeches. In fact, the latter were used so often that physicians were themselves commonly referred to as leeches. Learned physicians conferred on the best veins to tap for given diseases and the optimal placement of leeches for the most therapeutic value, and countless protocols dictated the proper amount of blood to be let or number of leeches to be applied. Doctors wrote lengthy papers describing their own bleeding techniques and presented them at august medical conferences. The whole idea was nonsense, of course, and has been shown to be so in the early 1600s by William Harvey, the discoverer of how the circulatory system actually works. But the fact that the scientific basis for bloodletting was non-existent didn't give pause to physicians 200 years ago, some of whom applied as many as 50 leeches to a single patient, and in the case of George Washington, relieved him of almost 2 quarts of blood in an effort to treat the throat infection that, coupled with a physician-caused anemia, ultimately killed him. We look back today and can only shake our heads and be thankful we ourselves don't have to worry about getting bled by lancet or leech, or that with today's modern, truly science-based medicine, we would ever be exposed to such nebulously grounded treatments. Surely, with all the scientific studies performed in great institutions the world over, today's doctors would never ignore the actual evidence and pursue unnecessary and possibly even harmful treatments? Would they? Sadly, many doctors today have the same herd mentality as those doctors of yore. By the tens of thousands, they treat a non-existent disease with drugs that are far from benign. And they do so based not on any hard scientific data, but because they, like their colleagues of 200 years ago, are firmly in the grip of groupthink. What is the non-existent disease? Elevated cholesterol. The vast majority of lay people have been bombarded with so much misinformation about cholesterol that most take it as a given that cholesterol is a bad thing, and that the less they have, the better. The reality is that nothing could be further from the truth. Cholesterol is an essential molecule, without which there would be no life, so important that virtually every cell in the body is capable of synthesizing it. Among its other duties, cholesterol is a major structural molecule, a framework on which other critical substances are made. Were we able to somehow remove all its cholesterol, the body would, in the words of Shakespeare, melt, thaw, and resolve itself into a dew. And that's not to mention that we wouldn't have bile acids, vitamin D, or steroid hormones, including sex hormones, all of which are cholesterol-based. Despite the essential nature of cholesterol, doctors the world over administer billions of dollars worth of drugs to try to prevent its natural synthesis. The fact that only a tiny minority of patients actually extend their lives by taking these drugs is lost on the multitude prescribing them, but not, of course, on the pharmaceutical industry making and selling them. How did we come to this sorry state? 60 years ago, a researcher, little known outside of academic circles, single-handedly set us on this path of cholesterol paranoia. Ansel Keys, Ph.D., a proponent of what has become known as the lipid hypothesis, concluded that excess cholesterol caused heart disease. He started out thinking that dietary fat in general drove cholesterol levels up, but as the years went by, he came to believe that saturated fat was the true cholesterol-raising villain. This idea of saturated fat as villain is so ingrained in the minds of health writers that the words saturated fat are almost never written alone, but always as artery-clogging saturated fat, which is more or less the basis for the lipid hypothesis. Saturated fat runs up cholesterol levels, and elevated cholesterol leads to heart disease. Nice and simple, but not true. It has never been proven, which is why it is still called the lipid hypothesis. Because of Keyes's influence, researchers for the past 5 decades have been beavering away in labs the world over, desperate to find enough actual proof to convert the lipid hypothesis into the lipid fact. But so far, they've fallen way short. In the process, however, they have vastly expanded our knowledge of the biochemistry and physiology of the cholesterol molecule. Thanks to their efforts, we now know that cholesterol is transported in the blood attached to carrier proteins, and that these protein cholesterol complexes are called lipoproteins. Their densities now describe these lipoproteins: HDL, high-density lipoprotein, LDL, low-density lipoprotein, VLDL, very low-density lipoprotein, and a number of others. Some of these lipoproteins are considered good, HDL, and others bad, LDL. And, of course, the drug companies have developed medications purported to increase the former while decreasing the latter. But they jumped the gun. Researchers have discovered a type of lipoprotein called small, dense, or type B LDL, that may actually end up being a true risk factor for heart disease. Problem is, this small, dense type B LDL is worsened by the very diet those promoting the lipid hypothesis have hailed for decades as the best diet to prevent heart disease, the low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet. Turns out that fat, especially saturated fat, decreases the amount of these small, dense LDL particles, while the widely recommended low-fat diet increases their number. The opposite of the small, dense LDL are large, fluffy LDL particles, which are not only not harmful, but are actually healthful. But the LDL-lowering drugs lower those, too. Cracks should have appeared in the firm entrenchment of the lipid hypothesis that now basically posits that elevated LDL causes heart disease, when a recent study showed that of almost 140,000 patients admitted to the hospital for heart disease, almost half of them had LDL levels under 100 milligrams per deciliter. 100 milligrams per deciliter has been the therapeutic target for LDL for the past few years. Instead of stepping back, scratching their heads and thinking, maybe we're on the wrong track here, the authors of this study concluded that maybe a therapeutic level of 100 milligrams per deciliter for LDL is still too high and needs to be even lower. Such is their lipophobic herd mentality. Nutritionist Johnny Bowden, Ph.D., and cardiologist Stephen Sinatra, M.D., have teamed up in this book to slash through the tall thicket of misinformation surrounding cholesterol, lipoproteins, and the lipid hypothesis. They wrote their fact-based book using easy-to-understand terminology and present a much more valid hypothesis of what really causes heart disease and a host of other diseases such as diabetes, high blood pressure, and obesity that will open your eyes to the emperor's state of undress. If you are worried about your cholesterol level or contemplating taking a cholesterol-lowering drug, we urge you to listen to this book. This book will put the facts in your hands to make a more informed decision. And we are confident you will enjoy their book as much as we did. Michael R. Eads, M.D. and Mary Dan Eads, M.D., May 2012, Incline Village, Nevada. Chapter 1. Why You Should Be Skeptical of Cholesterol as an Indicator of Heart Disease. The two of us came together to write this book because we believe that you have been completely misled, misinformed, and in some cases, directly lied to about cholesterol. We believe that a weird admixture of misinformation, scientifically questionable studies, corporate greed, and deceptive marketing has conspired to create one of the most indestructible and damaging myths in medical history, that cholesterol causes heart disease. The millions of marketing dollars spent on perpetuating this myth have successfully kept us focused on a relatively minor character in the heart disease story and created a market for cholesterol-lowering drugs worth more than $30 billion a year. The real tragedy is that by putting all of our attention on cholesterol, we virtually ignored the real causes of heart disease: inflammation, oxidation, sugar, and stress. In fact, as you'll learn in this book, cholesterol numbers are a pretty poor predictor of heart disease. More than half the people hospitalized with heart attacks have perfectly normal cholesterol levels, and about half the people with elevated cholesterol levels have perfectly normal, healthy tickers. Many of the general dietary guidelines accepted and promoted by the government and by major health organizations, such as the American Heart Association, are either directly or indirectly related to cholesterol phobia. These standard guidelines warn us to limit the amount of cholesterol we eat, despite the fact that for at least 95% of the population, cholesterol in the diet has virtually no effect on cholesterol in the blood. These guidelines warn us of the dangers of saturated fat, despite the fact that the relationship between saturated fat in the diet and heart disease has never been convincingly demonstrated, and despite the fact that research shows that replacing saturated fat in the diet with carbohydrates actually increases the risk for heart disease. Both of us became skeptical of the cholesterol theory at different points in our careers, traveling different pathways to arrive at the same conclusion. Cholesterol does not cause heart disease. We also believe that unlike trans fat, for example, saturated fat is not the dietary equivalent of Satan's spawn, and we'll show you why. Finally, and most important, we strongly believe that our national obsession with lowering cholesterol has come at a considerable price. Cholesterol mania has caused us to focus all our energy around a fairly innocuous molecule with a marginal relationship to heart disease, while ignoring the real causes of heart disease. We're each going to tell you in our own words how we became cholesterol skeptics, and why we fervently believe the information contained in this book could save your life. What you need to know. Cholesterol is a minor player in heart disease. Cholesterol levels are a poor predictor of heart attacks. Half the people with heart disease have normal cholesterol. Half the people with elevated cholesterol have healthy hearts. Lowering cholesterol has extremely limited benefits. Dr. Johnny. Before I became a nutritionist and ultimately an author, I was a personal trainer. I worked at Equinox Fitness Clubs in New York City, and the vast majority of my clients were there for one thing, to lose weight. It was 1990. Fat was considered dietary enemy number one, and saturated fat was considered especially bad because we all knew it clogged your arteries, raised your cholesterol, and led to heart disease. So, like most trainers, I put my clients on low-fat diets and encouraged them to do a ton of aerobics plus a little bit of weight training, which worked. Sometimes, more often than not, the strategy bombed. Take Al, for example. Al was an incredibly successful, powerful businessman in his early 60s with a huge belly he just couldn't get rid of. He was eating a very low-fat diet, doing a ton of aerobics on the treadmill in his house, and yet his weight was hardly budging. If everything I had been taught as a personal trainer was right, that shouldn't have been happening. But it was. Then Al decided to do something I didn't approve of. He went on the Atkins diet. Remember, those were the days when all of us were taught that fat, especially saturated fat, was pure evil. We had been taught that we need carbohydrates for energy and survival. We don't, but that's a discussion for another book. We had been taught that high-protein diets, such as the Atkins diet, were dangerous and damaging, largely because all that saturated fat would clog your arteries, raise your cholesterol, and lead to a heart attack. So I was pretty sure Al was headed for disaster. Except he wasn't. Not only did he start shedding weight and losing his substantial apple-shaped belly, but he also had more energy and was feeling better than he had in decades. I, meanwhile, was impressed with Al's results, but I was convinced he was paying a huge price, and that once he got the blood test results from his annual physical, I would be vindicated. I wasn't. Al's triglycerides, a type of fat found in the bloodstream and elsewhere, had dropped. His blood pressure had gone down, and his cholesterol had risen slightly, but his good cholesterol, HDL, had gone up more than his bad cholesterol, LDL. So overall, his doc was pretty happy. Right around this time, a biochemist named Barry Sears came to New York City to give a workshop at Equinox, which, of course, I eagerly attended. Sears, whose Zone diet books have sold millions, had a novel approach that can be summed up in four words: eat fat, lose weight. If Sears had been anything but an MIT-trained biochemist, he probably would have been laughed out of the room. But given his credentials and remarkable knowledge of the human body, he was pretty hard to dismiss. Now, Sears wasn't the first one to embrace fat and protein in the diet and recommend that we eat fewer carbs. Atkins, whose original diet was the one Al had tried so successfully, had been saying similar things since 1972. But the whole rap against Atkins was that his diet was high in saturated fat and would therefore likely cause heart disease. So even though many people grudgingly admitted that you could lose weight easily following his program, everyone, including me, believed that the cost would include a hugely increased risk for heart disease. Meanwhile, my eyes were telling me something very different, and it wasn't just because of what I had seen happen with Al. It was happening with other clients as well. Sick of not getting results on low-fat, high-carb diets, they threw caution to the wind and embraced the Atkins diet and the Protein Power diet and other protein and fat-friendly diets. They were eating more fat, even more saturated fat, but nothing bad was happening at all, unless, of course, you count feeling better and getting slimmer as nothing. Which got me thinking. Why weren't we seeing consistent results with our clients who were faithfully following low-fat diets and getting plenty of aerobic exercise? Conversely, why were our clients who were going on low-carb diets getting such high marks on their blood tests and astonishing their doctors? What if everything we'd been told about the danger of saturated fat wasn't exactly correct? And if what we'd been taught about saturated fat wasn't the complete truth, what about this relationship between fat and cholesterol? Was it really all as simple as I'd been taught? After all, even back in the early 90s, when people only talked about good and bad cholesterol, it was still obvious that overall, saturated fat had a positive effect on Al's cholesterol, as it did on the cholesterol levels of so many of my other clients. Saturated fat raised their HDL much more than it did their LDL. Could this whole cholesterol issue be a little more complicated than I and everyone else had previously believed? Eventually, I thought, going way out on a limb here, what if the whole theory that cholesterol causes heart disease was wrong in the first place? If that were the case, the effect of saturated fat on cholesterol would be pretty much irrelevant, wouldn't it? Then I began reading the studies. The Lyon Diet Heart Study found that certain dietary and lifestyle changes were able to reduce deaths by 70% and reduce cardiovascular deaths by an even more impressive 76%, all without making as much as a dent in cholesterol levels. The Nurses' Health Study found that 82% of coronary events were attributable to five factors, none of which had anything to do with lowering cholesterol. And that was just the tip of an ever-growing iceberg. Contrary to what everyone thought, study after study on high-protein, low-carb diets, including those rich in saturated fat, showed that the blood tests of people on these diets were similar to Al's. Their health actually improved on these diets. Triglycerides went down. Other measures that indicated heart disease risk also improved. In the mid-90s, I went back to school for nutrition, ultimately earning a CN, Certified Nutritionist designation, and later a PhD in Holistic Nutrition, and a CNS, Certified Nutrition Specialist certification, from the Certification Board for Nutrition Specialists, which is associated with the American College of Nutrition. During my studies, I learned that I wasn't the only one questioning the links among saturated fat, cholesterol, and heart disease. I talked to many other health professionals who shared my concerns, including one of the top lipid biochemists in the country, Mary Enig, Ph.D., whose entire academic career has been spent studying fat, and who believes that we have nothing to fear whatsoever from saturated fat. Enig, by the way, did some of the early research on trans fats, and fervently believes that it is trans fats, not saturated fats, that are the real villains in the American diet. I wholeheartedly agree. Enig is hardly alone in thinking that we have been collectively brainwashed on the subject of saturated fat and cholesterol. She has pointed out that when Americans were consuming whole, full-fat foods, such as cream, butter, pasture-raised meats, raw milk, and other traditional foods, the rate of heart disease was a fraction of what it is now. She had wondered aloud, as so many have since, whether it was indeed a coincidence that the twin global pandemics of obesity and diabetes just happened to occur around the time we collectively banished these foods because of the phobia about cholesterol and saturated fat in the diet, and began to replace them with vegetable oils, processed carbs, and ultimately trans fats. Enig was very active in a group for which I have come to have great respect, the Weston A. Price Foundation. Named after a pioneering researcher in the fields of diet and health, the foundation is an outspoken advocate for traditional unprocessed foods, including butter, raw milk, grass-fed meat, and other foods that have been demonized by the cholesterol establishment because of their relatively high saturated fat content. The foundation has also called much-needed attention to the fact that when Americans ate these foods regularly, for example, in the early part of the 20th century, heart disease was much less common than it is now. In my career, I have examined the strategies that seem to work for the healthiest, longest-living people on Earth, and found that lowering cholesterol has almost nothing to do with reducing heart disease, and definitely nothing to do with extending life. Study after study, including the Lyon Diet Heart Study mentioned previously, has shown that lowering the risk for heart disease has just about nothing to do with lowering cholesterol. And more studies and reports were coming out demonstrating that the real initiators of damage in the arteries were oxidation and inflammation, with cholesterol more or less in the role of innocent bystander. Oxidation and inflammation, along with sugar and stress, more on that in chapters 4 and 8, were clearly what aged the human body the most. It seemed to me then, and it seems to me even more now, that these were the culprits we should be focused on, not on a fairly innocent molecule that is utterly essential to human health. By now I was pretty convinced that we had been massively misled about the role of cholesterol in heart disease, and we had been misled about the dangers of saturated fat as well. One of the greatest frustrations I experienced during this time was trying to reassure my clients that not only would they not die if they went on higher protein, higher fat diets, but they'd also see significant improvements in their weights and the health of their hearts. But I was constantly butting heads with my clients' doctors, who completely bought into the myth that saturated fat will kill you by clogging your arteries, raising your cholesterol, and ultimately leading to heart disease. Fast forward to 2010. In 2010, Fair Winds Press, my publisher for 13 books over the course of 7 years, came to me with an idea. How about a book on how to lower cholesterol with food and supplements? They asked. To which I replied, I'm probably not the guy to write that one. I don't think lowering cholesterol matters very much. As you can imagine, that was met with a collective startle. My publishers were more than a little curious. How can lowering cholesterol not be important? They wanted to know. Don't doctors believe high cholesterol is the cause of heart disease? Don't they believe that lowering it is the most important thing you can do when it comes to preventing heart attacks? They do indeed, I replied. And they're wrong. Intrigued, my publishers asked me for more information. I suggested they start by exploring the website of the International Network of Cholesterol Skeptics, www.thincs.org. I sent them a number of peer-reviewed studies that cast doubt on the relationship between saturated fat and heart disease. And I sent them the impeccable investigative work of award-winning science writer Gary Taubes, whose exhaustive investigations of the role of fat in heart disease, beginning with his seminal New York Times article, What If It's All Been a Big Fat Lie?, has been so instrumental in calling attention to the profound weaknesses in the saturated fat cholesterol-heart disease connection. My friend Steve Sinatra is not only a board-certified cardiologist, but also a trained psychotherapist and nutritionist. Like me, he's also a member of the American College of Nutrition. And Steve has long believed that we've been sold a bill of goods on cholesterol. The story of how he came to the same conclusion that I did is fascinating, and includes his own personal experience as a lecturer-educator for some of the biggest pharmaceutical companies on Earth. Steve promoted statin drugs, and fully bought into the cholesterol-causes-heart-disease mythology that both of us have since.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?